Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests of both experiences and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. You're more than welcome to call in during the show to ask questions or make comments. And we'd also like to encourage you to support Toward the Light by sending a donation in kind or in cash and sponsoring this wonderful radio show. There are services and resources available for anyone who is interested through our organization, Toward the Light. So please do visit our website, towardthelight.org. This week I'm very pleased to have a fellow NDE and one who, like myself, is a lifelong visionary, having had visions and powerful experiences since childhood. Been a near-death experience, which actually I think somewhat validated and encouraged her experiences so she could pursue a very special and meaningful path as a result. Please welcome to Toward the Light, Vicki Segrist, Two Feathers. Welcome, Vicki.
Thank you for having me, Juliet.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you, and I'm really looking forward to finding out more about some of the visions and experiences that you've had. I see that you do a lot of healing work, and I've sort of categorized you as a medicine woman of sorts. It certainly would appear that way. But why don't you go ahead and start sharing with our listeners some of the experiences that you had as a child, and then let's follow that with your near-death experience.
Great. I'd be happy to do that. So as a child, I had visions and knowings about people. I could feel the angels behind me quite often, and I would share knowings with my family members, especially my father, and he would say, "That was nice, dear. I'm glad that you know these things. Let's just keep it quiet." And as a young adult, of course, I continued to know things and share things with people, and I did it in a very quiet way, as to not to bring any attention to myself. And then 10 years ago, I experienced a near-death experience. Oftentimes, a lot of my dreams come true that I have, and I had to go in for a surgery, just a simple surgery, as they called it, and yet not. And I had a dream prior ahead of time of a room, and I saw that the room, when I went into the surgery, was not the room, and my heart was really lifted and relieved that this was not the room of my dreams. But 4 days after the surgery, I ended up going back to the hospital, and I had thrown a clot in the middle of the night and woke up with a stroke. And at this point, I still did not go into my near-death experience until I was at the hospital later. And for me and my family, having a stroke at the age of 32 was unthinkable, because I worked out quite often at the local gym, and I took my children there, and I really didn't drink or smoke, and I was in good shape. So anyways, after waking up with my whole left side turned in, I looked towards my husband and I said, "I think we need to go to the hospital." And we ended up going to the hospital. They transported me to have an MRI. And prior to going into the MRI is where a white light came around me. I was completely surrounded by this white light, and this was the room of my dream. And I was shared with at that time that I just needed to go through this, and that this is just something that I needed to go through, and that I would be fine.
Now, are you referring to the MRI itself, or the whole experience of having the stroke, etc.?
The white light, yes, the whole, the having the stroke, the whole experience.
Okay.
Thank you. Not just the MRI. That's when the white light filled the room. They transported me back to the hospital. I was in the hospital bed, and a golden light surrounded my body, and I left. And for me, my near-death experience is if I raise my right hand bent, it's that close to me, and yet closer now. And what happened when I left my body is I was greeted by a greeter. I traveled up to the right side of me, and I was greeted by a greeter. And I could see my father a little off to the left of me, and it was wonderful to see him. He was healthy and whole and just a beautiful man, and it was great to see. And at the same time, to be able to acknowledge him telepathically, in a sense, I was standing there with the greeter, confused. I looked at the greeter and communicated that I had a husband and children at home, and I didn't quite understand why I was there and that I couldn't be there. And what happened at that point was the greeter opened up. It's kind of like pushing the clouds aside and looking down at my life. And I was able to see my daughter at the time, who was 2.5, in the cul-de-sac with my husband, and I knew where my son was. And the feeling that I have in that moment is so indescribable in human words here, that once I knew that my family would be fine without me, because that's what he was showing me and allowing me to see that, I could go farther. And that took a while to get used to when I came back. And I chose to go farther. And as I went farther, I reached a point they called the point of no return, which at that time was in the form of pearly gates for me, my perception of that. My father was coming in behind me, and the greeter shared with me that you have reached the point of no return. And if I took a step farther, I wouldn't be coming back. And at that moment, I came back for the sorrow of the children of the world and the healing of the universal circle of love. And the moment that transmitted into me or awoken to that, I instantly was coming back through like a tunnel, some would call it, and back into my body, where I was greeted by a neurologist who looked at me and said, "Welcome back. I thought we had lost you."
Wow.
So with that, I'm still knowing that I just needed to go through this. And it may have been some form of denial in my sense, and yet it wasn't. There was this calmness of, I just still needed to go through this. So now I'm a stroke patient and released out of the hospital on my 33rd birthday. And I came home thinking that I would continue going to the local gym, working out, running, and being the a suburban part-time working mom and just enjoying my life. And little did I know I would hit several walls. The first being when I woke up in the morning, I would have to get up very early and take a shower, and that would wear me out because now I'm considered a stroke patient with a brain injury. I would lay back down, get up for my children, get my son off to school, and be with my daughter. And it took everything in me to do that. It's the amazing will of individuals. I think that I just am truly, truly honored to be here, and I see in others the strength that people have.
So having the stroke actually forced you to be... it actually restricted your mobility, and it took a lot of, as you said, the will, mind over matter, as it were, to be able to navigate in the physical plane. Is that correct? That it was very exhausting and tiring for you. And were you
it
also?
Was, it was.
And did
it
you
was
experience having trouble walking, or is it just in general, all of your faculties being somewhat restricted now as a result of that?
As a result of the stroke, I would people would look at me, and I would look fairly what they classify as normal.
Mm-hmm.
Yet I was personally struggling with trying to get words out and knowing words and not being able to formulate them out of my mouth correctly.
Yes.
And which is a very hard thing, and as anybody knows, keeping up with a 2.5-year-old and having one going into third grade is quite a busy time in a mother's life. And fortunately for me, I have a wonderful husband who would go into work early and come home early and run the kids to the local, you know, karate or whatever they had going. He just really stepped it up and took me to the grocery store and was just really there for me. But the first year was really tough. I'd have to sleep lots. When the baby went down, I took a nap as well. And when the baby was up, I was working as hard as I could to be fully present for the children. So, yes, it took a lot just to get through a day. And then about after the first year of the healing, things were going along quite nicely, as you can say. And my husband came home with a gift certificate to see a psychic. And I had never been to a psychic in my life. And he just said, I knew that you always wanted to go to one. I heard she's really good, and let's go. And I said, okay, let's go do it. This sounds exciting, and yet you're going to park the Land Rover outside the house in case.
And translate that into English.
Really,
you're
different.
Going to park what in front of the house, please?
The Land Rover, the car.
Oh, the car. Right.
Yes. Yes, he was going to park it in the driveway so that nothing would happen to me. He was going to be my protector.
Now,
which is quite funny now.
I would like to ask a question, because I'm a professional psychic, and I realize today that I've been a professional psychic for 40 years, and I'm very curious where you or whoever would come up with the notion that a psychic is going to hurt you. Where does that come from? I'm really baffled by that.
Right.
Because I think of a psychic as myself as just being somebody who's aware, somebody who provides an overview, an insight. So where does this other stuff come from? I would really love to be educated about that, and maybe somehow we can help heal these odd sort of ideas that come about. Because you were feeling threatened, like this person might poison you or something.
Right,
and I'm
right.
curious where that mentality came from.
Well, I was brought up, my father anytime, and my whole family, anytime I would share my insights and stuff as a child, I was told not to talk about it. Because people might think, you know, you're crazy. And so that's where that came from, that fear, that childhood, not that there's any blame there. They did the best they could. And yet the fear was so strong from, I would say, my family of origin, that and I didn't know this person. This person was a stranger, and it was a new situation, and, you know, I was fearful myself and at the time. And doing the work now myself, I kind of laughed at it because it's all in love and light for me. And when I went in to see this psychic for the first time, immediately she looked at me and she just said, I'm not going to offer you a glass of water. Which, you know, was kind of funny, because here I thought they were going to put something in my water and take me to Mexico. You know, I had created this very elaborate story in my mind to get there, which is quite funny now, and was quite funny at the time, a little short while afterwards, because within the first 5 minutes, she looked at me and she just said, "Remember how you saw this sphere, this energy ball? Remember how you saw this energy being?" And she would describe the exact location where I had saw it and my experience of the different sightings. And she goes, "And you know how you know things about people?" And I'd be looking at her going, "Yes." She goes, "You're not crazy." And it's true. And so that was the start, because she said, "You're going to go see my acupuncturist and my naturopath and me." And what these three women did was they put a healing triangle around me. And they gave me a gift that is quite amazing, the gift to say anything or be anything or behave in any way that I needed to express myself to heal. These three women did. One would give me book after book, and both of them worked on my body. One would give me information about the supplements I needed. Now, this was all my choice to heal myself. And I'm very grateful for these three women now, who I consider friends.
Oh, I feel such love around all this. It's really remarkable. And I'm so pleased that you are led to this individual. What a precious gift this has been for you. And you sound so exuberant and so empowered and so wonderful. And I'm also very grateful for them, especially this delightful psychic, in encouraging you to honor your own gifts, because being aware is such a natural part of our being. It is not something that is evil, as the powers that be have tried to demonize all of this just to keep us locked in fear, which is just so inaccurate. And I would be willing to say that most psychics are loving souls who really do want to just help people, give them insights and help empower them and what have you. So that's really wonderful that that happened. And then tell me what happened after that. You did experience healing, obviously.
I did. I experienced healing, and I also have residual that I live with. And, you know, I'm still considered disabled, as some people would say in terms. And yet, what happened next was a wonderful soul came into my life, an award-winning book author, a Fortune 500 consultant, who I invited into my home, and the movement continued to progress. I ended up being called to Hawaii, and what happened was I manifested that trip. And I did that through what they call as a mastermind group. And I went to Hawaii, and we were on Kauai, in the Waimea Canyon. We were coming down the canyon, and my body got just so sick to its stomach that I asked my husband to pull the car over because I needed to touch the land where we were at. And when I touched the land, I knew because of this feeling on my body, I needed to find out more information about the site where we are at, because there was nothing to mark the site. It was just listening to my own intuition. So I went to the visitor center, and I asked the lady at the desk, you know, what is going on in this area? Can you share with me? And she said, "I can't. The person you would need to talk to is gone for the day at a meeting." And I said, "Oh, okay, well, I'll just wait around here." My husband went to get gas. And as he pulled up, I went out, and a woman showed up, and her name was Three Birds. And she was shared with the information that I was curious. And we ended up talking for 2.5 hours in her office. She affirmed all the energy. The energy was where the ancestors were buried and dug up. And the bones were coming back. It was her job to put the bones back into the earth of the ancestors, so that feeling would settle down. And so it was a great honor to be with this Puna for 2.5 hours because
she... Let me ask you this: were you at the top of the canyon? Because I used to live over there on Kauai, of course, and at the top is a small town called Kokee. And,
no, we were coming down the canyon.
You were coming down, okay,
down,
okay.
So we were down lower.
Lower
in the canyon.
It's
so
a very, very powerful space.
Right. And then our friends owned a magazine over there at the time, and they invited us to a little coffee get-together to hear a speaker, and we went to that. And then I was invited to hula up the way, about midway up. And we ended up showing up early to hula, 45 minutes early. And when the puna pulled up, I knew I needed to talk to her. So I went up to her. And my husband and I at this time, this is such a gift that he gets to come along with me through this journey. We were standing there, and we started talking with the puna. I introduced myself, and we started talking. And all of a sudden, I realized where I manifested this trip, the dolphins were right out in the ocean. And I just looked at her, and I said, I've been here. And she said, yes, you traveled here through the moonbeams. And she had a lot to share with me about my up-and-coming travels and the triangles and the different things that I would be coming upon. And we had a lovely chat. And then later that evening, we went up to dinner at the owners, the editors of the magazine. And they just looked at me and they said, who are you? You just don't get to talk to her. People wait a very long time to have an appointment, and she doesn't talk before hula. And I said, oh, really? I had 45 minutes with her. She was just a fantastic woman. And she talked about keeping the language alive for the children in Hawaii, the Hawaiian language. One of her main purposes. They both talked about that. Afterwards, we came back, and I was called to Peru, where I ended up doing full moon ceremony up on Machu Picchu with a paco, and having incredible visions through that. Having incredible visions of traveling through gateways in Peru. And the visions that I had, I shared with the lady who was running the group, and she said, meet me at the local little pizza place tonight for dinner. So we went down there, and I walk in on both sides of the walls are all the visions that I was sharing with her. They were painted on the walls.
Wow.
And that's my theory now. The incredible thing is when I was about 20 years old, 19, 20 years old, somewhere right in that age, I had made a stained glass window for a lad, and I had some of these parts of my theory already placed into the window. And I didn't realize it till 23, 24 years later after coming back. And so now I have this self-empowerment tools called the 7 Steps to Transformation and 9 Steps to Transformation that I share with people on how to deal with their personal triggers and how to achieve freedom. And it was, and if I didn't have these trips and this knowledge from Peru, I don't know if I could have fully brought this work out. So I came back, and by then my husband and I were opening our homes to communities, to authors, musicians, different people, monks to come through. We had a paco come up from Peru, and I had him look at my theory, and he says, yes, you got it all. And then I tried to do the work myself. I tried to sit with people and do the work, and I found I didn't trust myself. I was hearing some things that were, you know, pretty hard to hear, and I wanted to make sure that I had the knowledge to truly sit with people and trust myself and have tools to give them. And you know, at the time, now I'm a hollow bone where I can listen to spirit and heal and share with people and be in that space. And at that time, I thought, my own mind thought, I needed more. And yet I had it all at that time, and yet I learned so much going back to grad school to in applied behavioral science and systems counseling. And I went the first year and ended up taking a leave because my body was, at the time I thought, because my body was struggling to get through the work. It was taking everything in it to get through it. And I took a leave, and yet the calling to go to China and Tibet came up in between. And me being a suburban mom, working part-time, you know, having this near-death experience, I'm like, I look at a person, and I said, am I going to China and Tibet with you? And they said, yes, you are. And I just thought, you know, well, gosh, where's this money going to come from? And wouldn't you know it, it did manifest forward so that I could go to China and Tibet. And what an amazing trip that was. As soon as I got off the plane, my whole body was vibrating with what I felt in China. It was incredible, the energy there. And in Tibet, we went to different monasteries, and at each Montessori, I had guardians. They were real people, and I have to say that again, real people, because a lot of people think that they're not real people. They were real people dressed in brown, a person like you and I, walking with me through all the Montessori, sharing information with me or making my path easier in some way. I'm so grateful for that. We also ended up having a had Rinpoche Lama come and do ceremony with us. Prior to that trip, I had a dream as well. And while going to one of the Montessoris, I was in my dream. I was living my dream. It was unfolding in front of me. That night over dinner, I felt like somebody had taken a plug and pulled all my energy, was just draining quickly out like a bathtub. I went to the head lady and I said, I'm not feeling good. And she said that she wanted me to connect with this healer that was there from England. And he was there with us on holiday. And yet he took the time away from his wife to come up and support my own movement of energy. And as he supported me, vision after vision flashed by, and having what I would call another shamanic death. And he just looked at me and he said, you're not having heart failure. You just got blown out. And invited me to go shopping with him and his wife. And I kind of said, no, I had enough for the day. I think I'll just stay in my room and relax. And when I came back, I knew that I needed to finish grad school. It was important for me to finish something that I started and to continue my education. And I went back to grad school, and I ended up having another dream, of course. Often I'll dream about clients before I see them now, or I'll get the feeling right ahead of time of what chakra we're going to be working with. And I had a dream, and in that dream, and this whole time I'm working in grad school, I'm working out of a storefront, doing readings and teaching my seven steps with people. And I was using a different native name at the time, and I was given through a dream my name Two Feathers, and knew that I had to travel to the Navajo Hopi land. And I called a girlfriend, and I was sharing this vision with her, And she said, that's interesting. I need to go to Sedona, Arizona. So why don't we just go together? And so on the plane we went, and as we went to enter the Hopi land, I could feel the energy of the Hopi land, the circle of white light around it. And I said, we're now in the Hopi land. And we pulled up into the third mesa, and there was a greeter coming down the hill. And my girlfriend stopped, and I said, we need to go there, there, and there. And because the land just speaks to me now. And she said, okay, I'm just driving. I'll go where you need to go, Vicki. And the first stop we met at was the community center. And wherever I go, I like to give money to the children. And I went in and offered money, and she said, we don't accept the money here. You need to follow this path and go to the administration building. So off on this path, we started walking. Well, we came across a dried-out hole in the ground. And we both just looked at it, and I asked permission to go in, and they told me which way to enter. We went in, each of us. And I came out.
Was it like a cave, or what was it? Or was it just
It was more like what it was their sacred water area, and it was dried up.
Okay.
And so normally it's full of water, has water in it. And I saw another area I was interested in energetically, and so I traveled over to that. I started walking, and my girlfriend was still down doing her energy work. And then a gentleman came at us and started yelling at us and asked us what we were doing in their sacred area and stuff. And I said, I meant no harm. I'm just here to give money to the children. He said, where at? And they sent me up to the administration building at that point. So I went up there, and what happened was the administration building sent me back down to give the money to the gentleman who approached us. And he had already left a meeting, and we went to go back into the same door where we first started, and it was locked. And I thought, great. And by then, I had added more money to it. And I thought, okay, here's another locked door. It needs to open. And sure enough, a young person came out, and we grabbed the door, and we went back in, and I presented the money to the woman, and I shared with her that, you know, that we were supposed to bring it back here to the gentleman, and she said that he was gone away at a meeting and that she would give it to him. The next area we went, because there were three areas that I mentioned, we didn't end up stopping because that was their sacred burial area and honoring the transition of a person going past. We did not go there. Then we ended up going up to the top, which was their ceremonial area, come to find out. And then we came back, and our fortune was to run into an elder gentleman from the Hopi land. And he looked at me. I asked him a few questions, and he said, you're going to go do your work on me now. And I thought, wow. No, I ran. I said, no, I'm not. He goes, well, you enjoy the Navajo land, and you go do this. And it's exactly what we did. We went to the Navajo land, and incredible experiences happened there. People were so open to us. I have three phone numbers from the local cafe shop of people inviting us to come stay with them when we come back in town. And just incredible things happened to our, you know, we went to go to sleep that night, and it was a welcoming of spirits just filled the room, saying, hello, welcome here. And then we had incredible experiences on the canyon. And I had shared with my friend, I said, I need to go back and see that Hopi elder. I need to give him my medicine cards that had traveled with me through all these different places, and hundreds of hands had touched them, and many people enjoyed them, and so their beautiful energy was connected to them. And I went back and I offered him this gift, and he said, you'll work on me now. And I said, yes, I will. And normally I wouldn't share with who I work on, and yet he said it was okay to share. And we ended up being in his back office area for over 2 hours, me working on him. And it was an incredible, empowering experience, and I'm so grateful for it. And presently, I'm showing up. I am living my life. I'm in freedom and releasing attachments, and I just keep showing up and doing the work, and that's where I'm at now.
What do you feel was the catalyst for enabling you to actually eliminate the self-doubt and believe in yourself and your calling and your visions and your gifts? What do you think actually enabled you to turn that corner, as it were?
I think it's the support of all the people that have come into my life, and learning to trust myself. And through the seven steps, what I do is I recognize triggers. And so I recognize triggers within myself, and I've learned to move these triggers where something sets you off or, ouch, that hurts, you know, that fear. And I teach people to go into that and come through it. And so in my life, I've had to build up my resilience, and the people I talked about all have impacted me in some way in building that resilience to where I am now, and, of course, myself and my family.
Well, that is tremendous, and lots of love and gratitude to them. Feel free to tell us a little bit about your this work, the seven, what did you call it, please?
I have 7 and 9 steps to transformation. I also do business blessings and home blessings. I can do individual work on people, where I travel inside of them, and because of the gifts that come through now, I'll sit across from somebody, and I will feel the energy before they go there, and I will get visions of where perceived stuck energy gets stuck in one's body, not allowing them to be at their highest and fullest potential.
Yeah.
And so what I do is I travel with them. I travel into the moment. And what we do is we explore, experience, and express. And sometimes we don't even have to express it. But I think it's so empowering for people to give voice to maybe a moment of perceived stuck energy. And that way they can release it themselves. I am only a hollow bone, and they're doing the work. I'm just there assisting the individuals through their own movement, is how I like to put it. And so there's 7 steps, and the first step is to re-amplify. And the action step to that, that's the description. The action step is something sets you off. Ouch, that hurts. The process is called a trigger. The second step is you recognize something, this description. The action step was, this was said and I feel. So you're acknowledging it. That's the process. The third step is you re-identify it. Where did this happen before? Where is it located in my body? So the process is past location, family of origin. Then you remember it, which is the fourth step. You stay with the moment. Tears, cheers. And when I say stay with, that's the process. The action step, what I always like to point out here, is to stay with it for 10 minutes at the most. Just tap in, tap out to help create that movement. Then you recover, you walk through, you bring it to the here and now. Today I am okay. Just us living in the United States, we're so fortunate to have what we have. So the process is you walk through. And then the sixth step is resilience. Each time you face your fear, your resilience builds. That's your action. And the process is building. Then you reorganize, which is the seventh step, balancing one's essence. And so you return back to that center, that knowingness that you have. Because a fear is just, to me, it's something that's pulling you off your center. And it's also in this process, that's balance. And it is also, to me, just energy. Energy is just energy. And that takes us to the eighth and ninth step. And the eighth step is releasing. Surrender your acquired resilience and okayness generated in the first 1 through 7 steps. Now, this is more of, I would say, a person who has worked with energy for quite a while, and they've gotten through this first building their resilience, and then that's the integration part. And then the ninth step, the description or the applied, is recreating. And the dimensional is surrender your attachment to spirit, to infinity, and live from eternality. And behind that is the philosophy of freedom. So those are the 9 steps. And a lot of times I'll work with people, say, 5 to 7 times with the 7 steps, and they have really transformed themselves quite a bit. And it's such an honor to be sitting with them while they go through this.
Oh, I can certainly understand that myself, being doing healing work and counseling. That's tremendous. Now, have you written about this at all? Or is it just something that you do as a practice with clients?
I do have the writings. Thank you for asking. I do have them down in writing, and it was my theory for my grad school work. And what I would like to do with it, and what I'm looking into now, is I'm still in the process of forming this. I would like to form, because I'm offered to go out and speak oftentimes, and I would like to create a workbook that people can visually and tactilely do to help bring it into their bodies better. I also have a book that I started, and I also have a children's theory, three books of children's books started. So I'm quite busy right now, which is a wonderful thing.
That's great.
A lot to get done in this lifetime.
Oh, sure. And it just feels like it's never ending, even, you know, especially when we're sent back from the other side, it seems. And I'm really excited about this work that you're doing, and it resonates so deeply within me, too, and I think a lot of people listening will really resonate with this as well, because it's something that we're all working on, even unbeknownst to some people, and it is a critical time right now to really let go of past and allow ourselves to evolve into our authentic selves. And I think that this process that you're using is a very good tool for achieving that. And I also think that having a workbook so that people can go back to it and use it and apply it over and over again is a tremendous idea. And certainly let me know when you've completed that, and I'd be happy to help spread the word on that. How close is this to being done, or do you even know? Exercise book or workbook, sorry.
Somewhere I do know the answer, and to give you an answer now would not be probably accurate from this
okay.
human standpoint. I like to think everything happens in spirit's time. And,
exactly, yes.
And it'll continue to unfold. My family and I just recently moved to a new area, and the community has been so welcoming to me and my business here. It's incredible to be so graciously brought in by a community. And so I have other things going on as well. I'm presently looking into starting a well-being center. And so I do have a lot going on. And I'm looking at tech support right now for this work, because just drawing the work out, I already met with a woman in the Ladies of Seven who overlooked all my work, and there's so many layers to this work that I myself had to go and get the overhead projector little plastic things and start coloring them out on them and laying layer upon layer. So it's very multidimensional.
Oh, sure.
And that's why the workbook came into idea. So I have the work, and now I'm in the process of getting support, tech support, that I need to bring it forward. And I know I'll be provided for because this work does need to come out.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. And in fact, I'm feeling very strongly that everything you need and then some is indeed going to be provided for you. What area are you in? I know you're somewhere in Washington State, correct?
Right. We just moved from Bellevue, which was a suburb of Seattle, and now we're farther out up north in a town called Lake Stevens. And we have this wonderful access to the lake and greenbelt walking, so it's very relaxing out here. And the people have, like I said, just been so welcoming. It's really nice to come into community and be really appreciated for what you have to offer.
That's very nice. Is that anywhere near Bellingham? I'm certainly familiar with Bellingham, but I haven't been there. I haven't been in a long time.
Yeah, Bellingham's it's a ways up north farther. In between Everett and Marysville, off, I believe, to the east a little bit is how you would say it.
All right.
Yeah. And one thing we talked about, you and I talked about on the phone, was people experiencing a fear of death and the unknown. And something that I wanted to share, my own knowing of that, is that I thought I was fearing death again when I first came home. I would not want to go to sleep at night for fear I would die in my sleep. And I have heard other people who are being challenged with health issues experience this as well. They don't want to go to sleep at night. And for the normal person, I've heard people say that they fear death. And some of it is the fear of death. And my understanding is it where are we truly not living our life to our fullest potential that we're truly fearing? And I think if we can kind of switch that a little bit sometimes, instead of looking at the fear of death, and look at where am I truly not living my passion right now, is a
very good, yes.
Yeah.
That's a great point. And what would you have to share with people about, you know, how we can help them overcome their fear of death? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, the first one would be to look at if it's a fear of death or if it's a fear of fully living. That's what I would say to people. Or some people may say, I fear leaving my children. And what are they not doing with their children that they want to be doing right now, and what's stopping them? So that's one part of it. And for me, death is our own perception of what death is. For me, at the time, it was the pearly gates. The next time I pass, who knows what it'll be, because I've had many shamanic deaths, say in Peru, where I visually saw the gates. And then in Tibet, where I had visions of flying above the Montessori as a spirit in the form of a bird. So each time we die, there's a birth in my own sense, a birth of one's own newness. But in regards to the final death, as one would say, if there is such a thing for some, who may believe that, to me, the place I was at, that is not a concern, because the feeling I had come over me and the knowingness I had while I was there, as a mom who is strongly, firmly believing and wanting to be a mom and wanting to be here and to the fullest, I was over there and I could still leave because the feeling was so incredible. And like I said, there's no words that can possibly describe what I felt there, other than maybe enlightenment, but I don't even know if that describes it fully.
I think we all have trouble with that one, because I know that with my various near-death experiences and even spiritually transformative experiences, there's really no way to describe what we feel. And the, you know, sadly, unconditional love has become such a cliche anymore, but yet it's nothing short of that, at least according to my experience. And yet that's still, you know, what does that really mean? It means something different to everyone, and we can't really know what it means until we've experienced it firsthand. And it certainly sounds like you've experienced it firsthand, and indeed there's nothing quite like that. It just brings about such a profound feeling of peace, of knowing, of assurance. That certainly is what happened for me. I had no sense of doubt, no sense of fear, whatever, on just a total trust. And, you know, how many of that can sit here and say that we feel that right now? You know what I'm saying? So I think that this is really special, and ideally it will serve as a reminder that that love, that all-encompassing love, is real. Jumping around a little bit, and excuse me for doing this, what does your name Two Feathers mean? How were you given that, and what does it mean? It seems really, really special somehow.
For me, it is special. It's who I am. And it's my genetic makeup, I would say, my DNA, my whole being. And it's my heart name. So it's truly me. And I was given it through a dream. And I often experience dreams that come true, as I spoke about earlier. And I had a dream where I had a knowing I had to be on the Navajo land. And that's what inspired me to go to the Hopi Navajo land. I trusted myself and had these incredible experiences. And just recently, a beautiful confirmation of the name. I've had it confirmed by other people. But a beautiful confirmation, I was gifted Two Feathers. And immediately I knew I needed to take them to a certain medicine woman in this area, a gift she truly is. And I traveled up to her property and sat with her on her porch. And each of the feathers has a story in it. And I came home from that experience needing to do a ceremony around the feathers and see what the path of these two feathers are. And so many gifts came through when I went through these ceremonies with myself, and they're very personable. They're who I am, basically, is where the name comes from. Mm. And that's how it came about.
Well, it feels really special to me, and it feels like, you know, when I'm looking at a vision of them, I'm seeing these beautiful glowing kind of blue-white, luminous feathers, and I'm seeing they're symbolically balancing the two different planes. And, of course, I know that there's a lot more than two planes, but we've been talking a lot about integrating our experiences on the other side with our experience on the physical plane, integrating and balancing those two, and not feeling like they've got to be separate from each other or opposing each other, if you follow what I'm saying. Being able to acknowledge the power, again, that we experience as a result of being on the other side, acknowledging the fact that we are indeed multidimensional, and you have been, ever since childhood, tapping into and being in these multiple dimensions simultaneously and integrating them into this plane and using your wisdom. I think it's really important, too, and perhaps you've been doing this, of writing down your dreams, because I've shared this a lot with my family, you know, and my husband crossed over, and then my daughter and I, We compare notes with dreams all the time. I always ask her, well, what have you been dreaming lately? And she'll ask me the same thing. And I always tell her, please pay attention to your dreams, lovey, and all honor them because they do mean something. And I can't stress that enough because, again, so many people have debunked anything that is apart from the physical plane. Oh, that's just a dream. It's not real, what have you. When quite the opposite is true. So I really am excited about the fact that you have done and are doing so much work with the dream time and honoring that. And I really, really like to encourage other people, always pay attention to your dreams because they're a wonderful source of guidance and of empowerment. Wouldn't you say that's true?
I think dreams are so powerful. For me, the dreams are my reality. I'm living my dream. Like I said, I will dream about a client, and I will be with the client experiencing something, and then a client will show up in front of me that day, and I'll have the information and to help someone maybe confirm. Recently, I just ran across someone who is really a strong Christian and was trying very hard not to be in judgment of me. And yet the information I had from my dream supported the confirmation for this woman that this work is real and it's happening and it's all in love and light.
Yeah, well, that so is dream- really... That is so beautiful. And on that note, I realize that we've just concluded another transmission of Toward the Light leading back to the source. As always, these precious hours go by so quickly. I want to thank you so much, Vicki Two Feathers, for being our guest today. And you have been listening to Toward the Light leading back to the source. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you that it is only with the heart that one sees rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember that only love prevails. We will speak to you next week when we will have PMH Outwater back on our show. She's been a wonderful friend and guest over this time, and so she'll be with us next week, and we look forward to having another transmission of Toward the Light. Blessings and light to all. We will talk to you next week. Cheerio for now.